This is the Car Dealer Podcast driven by CarGurus. You want the best return for your advertising budgets, and CarGurus Piston Heads are focused on the same goal. With them, you have access to millions of monthly shoppers across both sites. Connect with in-market high-quality buyers today and turbocharge your digital forecourt. For more information, visit dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and schedule a demo with their team. That's dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and tell them we sent you. Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast. If you haven't listened before, we pick our favourite stories of the week and asked an automotive industry guest to choose whose stories were best. I'm Rebecca Chaplin, contributing editor at Car Dealer Magazine, and I am standing in for your usual host, John, today, who's not feeling very well. But joining me is a regular on the podcast, a man so independent he texted me last night to ask his shoe size whilst he was shopping for flip-flops. It's editor-in-chief James Baggett.
That is actually true. But what I did to find out what my shoe size was try the flip-flop on,
which is
the traditional way of buying shoes.
I should add, when I first started working for James as a very junior in the office, he used to ask me to find out if he was eating too much of different things, like how many eggs could he eat in a day, how many bananas could he eat in a day.
I mean,
he obviously had too many staff.
Those are the days.
Yeah. It encouraged me to work my way up the chain away from those roles. So what has been keeping you busy this week, apart from buying new Havaianas?
What has been keeping me busy? Well, basically writing lots and lots and lots of copy. It's been a very exciting week for the motor trade. It's one of those weeks where you just get inundated with loads of news, and just everybody wants to talk to you about it, which always makes it really interesting. I love these weeks. I love it when big things happen, and it just it brings the excitement back to the job, doesn't it? You know, it's one of those things where you just have to just keep writing, and that's what I've done all week. So I've got a lot of RSI, and just enjoyed chatting to people about their opinions about what's been going on, which I'm sure we'll cover.
I'm sure we will. So welcome to this week's guest, who is James Wilson, Chief Operating Officer at Motorway. James has been with Motorway for nearly 2 years now and previously worked with Amazon in the UK too. Thank you for joining us, James. How has your week been?
Great. Well, thanks for inviting me. It's great to be here. Yeah, it's been good. It's been busy. We're spending a lot of time. We just launched Motorway Pay, which I think you covered in Car Dealer, and that's been a big focus for us. So working very closely with dealers to help them adopt that and getting their feedback on it, which has been great so far. So busy on that. Also just keeping the business ticking over keeps me busy enough. So ensuring we've got lots of cars for sale for our dealers each week is a big priority for me.
What's the appetite like at the moment from consumers? Is it still
booming? It's good. I mean, I think it's fair to say May was a little bit slower, but June has definitely come back and it's really strong, both on the seller side and also on the dealer side. And overall, actually, the first half of this year has been very strong for us. So that's really encouraging. But we had a very strong year last year. We doubled the business. And you know, coming into a year on the back of that, you're always a little bit apprehensive about how the year is going to go. Obviously, we're very positive, but it's been good that so far it's met expectations. So that's good.
Fantastic.
When we spoke earlier in, I think it was back end of last year, and we published a video about Motorway earlier this year. One of those things that dealers mentioned to us, and you guys quite rightly mentioned to us, was the fact that those paying for those cars was a pain point, wasn't it? It's because customers they sold the car on the platform and then the dealer paid them directly, and there was always this kind of like there was a little bit of unease, wasn't there, with some people about that. So it was always something that you guys wanted to tackle. Just explain to me, I'm sure a lot of your users know all about this, but those people who don't use Motorway, just explain how this has changed the platform and why it's such a big shift.
Yeah, the way it works is dealers sign up for a Motorway wallet and they can put money into that account. And when they have inspected a vehicle and decided to pay for that vehicle at collection, they can then pay both the seller and the finance house, if there's financing on the car, at the touch of a button. So it's instantaneous payment. And we kind of take care of the rest. So to make that payment happen, you need to collect a set of documentation from the seller. You need to verify that. You need to set up the payment. And then you need to ensure that payment obviously goes from the the wallet that we've, the motorway wallet, to the seller and the finance house. And we know from talking to dealers, as you mentioned, that there's a significant amount of administration associated with that. And by launching this product, we've taken that away from the dealers. We've taken it on, and we can do that because we've got the scale and we've got the technology to make that process more efficient. And what's been encouraging is the dealer feedback saying, look, this is great. It's taken the admin away from me. It means I can spend more time sourcing the vehicles that I want to have on my forecourt and that I want to sell. And that's a big win for them. And so that's particularly satisfying. So it took us quite a long time to develop that.
Yeah.
So to get that feedback once you've launched and to see the real impact on the bottom line for our dealers is really satisfying.
Yeah, and I bet on the other side, for the dealers who are buying multiple cars from the platform, being able to just deal with one partner, i.e. you, rather than paying 30, 40 different people, different private customers, must make it a lot more easy, like you say, on the admin side.
Exactly. It's really visibility. They can see all of the different transactions they've made. We confer at the end of a transaction, that's confirmed back to them, so they know the money's been sent. And it's the same on the seller side as well. So they'll get a confirmation. So there's more transparency, as well as just making the administrative side much easier as well.
So, I mean, motorway is the journey you guys have been on has been absolutely amazing. I loved coming up and chatting to you all and hearing about the launch of the business. Talk to me about the growth that you've had. I mean, give me some idea, and those people listening, on the numbers that you're doing now in terms of volume of sale.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're selling typically about 6,000 cars a week, which kind of gives you a sense of the scale. We've got very often more than 1,000 cars for sale in each day. Today, we've got 932 vehicles for sale. And so it's grown really, really strong. And as I said, you know, last year was fantastic for us. The first half of this year has proven also to be very strong. And I think it really just reflects the value that we're adding on both sides of the marketplace. Yeah. So sellers get a great price because we're connecting them to thousands of verified dealers, more than 5,000 verified dealers that use our platform. And dealers get access to high quality stock that they can sell on at a good price that's profitable for them and turn that quickly as well, which is also obviously very important for our dealers. So it's creating benefits on both sides of the marketplace, which I think is the secret sauce really behind our growth.
I certainly recommend, and I'm just saying this because you're on the podcast, but I certainly recommend motorway to a lot of people that are looking to sell their car because, you know, I genuinely think it's a very impressive platform. Have you got any stats on how much more people get from selling their cars via your platform compared to other quick to market routes to dispose of a used car?
I mean, I don't have those to hand. We obviously looked into it. I mean, we know it's in the hundreds of pounds.
So genuinely, people do make more selling their car via motorway.
What we found is that because you've got thousands of dealers who are bidding on the vehicle, so the way the daily sale works is it's an auction in which dealers will bid on the vehicle at the price that they think it's good value for their business. And what that means is you're matching the supply and demand more effectively than if, as a seller, you take your car to another through another channel like a product exchange where you've got one company buying that vehicle. You don't have that competition, so inevitably it's more likely to be the case that you get a better price.
And what's your when you're talking to people who are not using your platform, and in this instance I'm talking about car dealers, what do you say to them? I mean, what is your sales pitch to them?
It's about accessing high quality stock. We know that the feedback we get from the dealers that are using our platform is they love the variety of stock, the quality of stock, the quality of the profiles, the descriptions of that stock, and the fact that they can get that at good prices, which they can sell on profitably. At the end of the day, from a dealer perspective, our goal is to help them grow profitably. If we do that, then it's going to be good for our business and it's good for their business. And that's what I hear consistently from the dealers that are using our platform.
Yeah, the ones I chatted to for the video, they were massive fans of the platform, and we sort of plucked those at random, really. So it was nice to see a cross section of your customers saying great things about you. And when it comes to that payment side of things, is that fixing the other sort of pain point, which was buying multiple cars on the platform? Because with traditional auction houses, buying big numbers of cars and getting them delivered is actually quite an easy thing to do, isn't it? Yes, it's it costs quite a lot of money to do, but it is quite an easy thing to do. On motorway, because they're buying individual cars, it can be a little bit more difficult. Is this something that's been fixed by the payment thing, or is this something you're still working on?
I think it certainly helps. So the payment solution, Motorway Pay, certainly helps dealers who are buying large volumes. I mean, we have dealers who are buying high volumes and are not encountering any challenges around fulfillment of them. That being said, I think there's still more we can do, particularly around transport and helping our dealers with that. So it's an area that is going to continue to be a focus for us in the coming months, for sure.
Because I suppose the issue is the fact that these cars are at people's individual houses. They're not at one location, are they? I mean, if they were all in one central location, it would be a lot easier to distribute them. I mean, is that a way that you could sort of fix things, like offer the chance for the customers to actually bring the cars to a central point?
I mean, it's certainly an option. It's not something we're pursuing at this stage, because part of the proposition to our sellers is that they can sell their car fully online from the comfort of their own home.
Yes.
So that's not really consistent with our overall proposition to them. And so, yes, whilst that is a potential solution, it's not one that we're going to be pursuing anytime soon.
You can see why it's just what you guys do is very unique, and actually why this is quite a difficult area of the market to get right, isn't it? Because there are lots of different pain points in lots of different areas, especially when you really want to scale it.
But that's, I mean, that for us, that's the opportunity.
Yeah.
And where we can bring our understanding of technology and innovation to this process. And in fact, you know, if you look at the way that people who are selling their car profile their vehicles, we have apps that they use, and the feedback we get from dealers is that creates very high quality photography of the vehicle that's really consistent across all of the thousands of vehicles that we have. And underneath that, underneath the bonnet, is some very smart technology, some aspects of AI in there, which ensure that is done consistently into a high quality. And so that's the opportunity for us. That's what we're trying to create. We're trying to bring that expertise to this process and make it easier for sellers and for dealers.
And James, you used to work at Amazon, didn't you?
Mm,
so what's Amazon's, and have they got any interest in the car market? I mean, it's one of those things that have been constantly rumored, hasn't it?
I genuinely don't know is the honest answer.
So your transfer across to motor, it wasn't anything to do with the fact you were previously doing car stuff.
Absolutely not. No. I genuinely don't know. I don't know what their interest is. I wasn't involved in that, in anything to do with cars at Amazon.
Oh, shame. I thought I was going to get an exclusive.
James is waiting for the line that's maybe.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Ex-employee says, maybe cars are
available. No, please don't quote me. I'll get in lots of trouble.
Don't worry, we won't do that, James. I just think there's a lot of people looking at Amazon and thinking, well, if someone like them could come along and deliver car sales in a slightly different way, maybe they would be the ones that could get it right.
Well, look, I mean, Amazon's a very successful company. I spent 8 years working there, and I enjoyed it immensely. But as I said, I don't know what their plans are. I think what I do know is what we're trying to do, which is do what I said earlier, which is use technology to deliver this much better experience for sellers and dealers in buying and selling cars. So far, that seems to be working. We have to keep working hard on that because there's a lot of unfinished business. But so far, so good on that front.
Yeah, interesting. Well, thanks for answering my many questions, many varied questions.
Shall we get on with this week's stories?
Let's do that.
Because there's a lot to talk about.
There is.
If you haven't listened before, here is how it works. James and I have both chosen our favourite stories that have appeared on Car Dealer this week, and we don't know what each other have chosen. We're going to take it in turns to reveal those stories and have a chat about each one. At the end, our judge James, very confusing when I've got two Jameses on, has the final say on who is the winner. And if you enjoyed today's show, make sure you leave us a review wherever you are listening. You won last week against John, so you can go first.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. So obviously, I'm going to be talking about the big news of the week, which is the offer that has come in from a Canadian car dealer group, Alpha Auto Group, for the listed business Lookers. They've offered £465 million for that business at 120 pence per share. That was an announcement made on Tuesday, I think it was. It's been a long week. That saw the share price of Lookers leap to 118 pence per share off the back of that news. Clearly, a lot of people thinking it's going to go through. So to get to this point, the Canadian business has got agreement. They've got letters of intent from shareholders in the Lookers business. They say they've got irrevocable undertakings from 42.1%. That's changed slightly now. There was an update to the stock market this morning. One of those shareholders that have given that letter of intent has actually sold a lot of their shares this week at that 118 pence share price, clearly wanting to cash in quickly. So they've now got agreement from 39% of shareholders. They only need 50% to get this deal over the line. They have importantly got agreement from the Lookers board for this deal. One of those shareholders that have given letters of intent is Cinch, owned by Constellation Automotive Group, that bought a big 20% shareholding in Lookers, I believe, around a year ago. So it does look like this deal is going to go ahead. One of the interesting things, and I'm going to slightly spin this off into one of the follow-up stories that we did, and that was the fact that a rival bid could still come in for Lookers. Schroders, which were another one of those shareholders that are part of that 40% collective that have said they are happy to sell those shares, have said their letter of intent has got will only stand, try and get my words out here, will only stand if another bid doesn't come in that's 110% of it. So effectively what they're saying is if somebody else wants to come in buy Lookers, it's going to cost them 132 pence per share. So there are quite a few businesses that are very acquisitive across the world, mostly from the States and Canada, like the Alforta group that put in this bid, that could still come in and trump this. I'm not sure whether they will. Talking to some of the city experts that I have done this week, a few of them think this is going to go ahead, even though they think it looks cheap. A target price earlier this year from the likes of Liberum was 150 pence per share. So at 120, this is pretty much a steal, really, for the Canadians. And I think when you look at actually what Lookers is worth, just look at the cash they've got in the bank. They've got £66.5 million in the bank as of the end of April, so take that off the purchase price. They've got property, £290 million, take that off the purchase price, and actually they're buying the Lookers business for 100 million quid, which makes, as of the end of last year, £82 million a year in pre-tax profits. Well, they're going to get their money back pretty quickly. And it's when you look at those sums, even sums that I can understand, you realise just quite how cheap this business is being sold for. And I think what that says to me is that, you know, this is the first of many. I mean, Mark Lavery said to us at Car Dealer Live earlier this year that he doesn't think there is going to be any listed businesses on the stock market, any listed car dealer businesses on the stock market at the end of this year. And it looks like his prophecy is coming true, doesn't it? So, yeah, I mean, a fascinating bid, and one that's clearly had a lot of interest on our website this week. What did you think of it, James? Were you surprised this Canadian business?
I must confess, I didn't know anything about Alpha Auto Group.
No, neither did I.
When I read your article, of course, on Car Dealer.
Thank you.
I think I was a bit surprised by it, I must say. But looking into it, I think as you say, it seems to be part of a broader industry trend that we're seeing. And I guess the next question is, if this goes through, what happens to the remaining groups? And also, once it's gone through, what happens to Lookers? So what is the investment thesis that AAG has? You know, how do they think they're going to extract even more value than what you just described? So I think for the whole industry, I think it's really interesting to see this, and also to see this coming from companies that are outside the UK as well.
Yeah,
I think it probably helps that the pound is not that strong versus the dollar at the moment.
Yeah.
I think it's a really interesting dynamic or trend that we're seeing in the industry at the moment.
I also think it's a massive shame, especially for, and I mentioned this before on the podcast, for us in particular, because it's a great source of news stories having listed businesses. You get an insight every quarter of what exactly is happening with those largest car dealer groups in the UK, which sort of obviously correlates with all the other businesses that read our publication. So I do think it's a shame, but I definitely think it's happening. I think Virtue is going to be lined up in very short order, and I think Pendragon will do, and I'm sure we'll come onto these as the podcast goes on.
Yep.
I think the Alpha Auto Group really did surprise me. Batch and I were the only ones working on the website that morning when that story broke, both of us pulling our hairs out, and what little ones Batch has got, but I'll let that one settle. We can listen to the podcast later. But the Alpha Auto Group, is he went out to try and find out some information about them, and actually there is no information about them out there. Their website is very, very scant on detail. They turned over last year $1 billion. They made $100 million dollars profit on that, which puts them about the same size as in terms of profitability as Lookers. But actually, the relative minnow in this deal, they're the smaller company funding this purchase of Lookers, which turns over $4 billion last year, funding this purchase via funding from Canadian banks. So I find that really fascinating, that they are the small guys coming here, making this what looks like a very audacious bid for Lookers, and it's been agreed. So I think, yeah, the Alpha Auto Group, nobody knew anything about, but I'm pretty sure their Google search traffic has probably gone up quite high this week, certainly from the likes of us. What did you think of it, Becca?
Well, we've been talking for ages, haven't we, about how these companies are undervalued. And we reported, what was it, a few weeks ago, about there was a Dutch company that came in and bought, and I know we're talking about much smaller businesses, but there do seem to be these big automotive groups that are looking, they're going shopping globally, because I mean, yeah, they picked up another dealer group in Germany. And I think where these businesses are undervalued, like say the pound's not that great, this is a good place to buy at the moment, and we're quickly going to see these companies disappear from, well, not disappear from the UK, but you know what I mean, their ownership, it's going to be very different this time next year.
One other thought is whether there'll be more consolidation. So we're talking about the big groups, but is there going to be more consolidation of some of the smaller dealerships into those larger groups as part of this strategy? I think that's the other piece that's going to be interesting to see play out in the coming months.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of that coming. I mean, I think that the other thing that really sticks out for me in this mind is actually, you've got to remember that not long ago, earlier this year, Lithia, the huge US-based dealer group, bought Jardines. And they paid £300 million for that dealer group. Now, Jardine's pre-tax profit for 2021, which with the last ones we could see, was £24.5 million. So you compare that to Lookers of £85 million, and actually they've paid a big premium for Jardine, Lithia. It shows you again how much of a bargain Lookers is. Mm. I strongly believe. Another bid will come out of the woodwork, especially from someone like Lithia, because if they've already paid $300 million for Jardine, a 50 dealer group, and they're looking at Lookers and thinking, well, actually, I could get that for not much more than I've just paid for this 50 dealer group, and Lookers got 150 dealers. So I think another deal will be tabled.
I was going to ask this. Who do you think could come out of the woodwork? And we've been talking about super groups as well. That's been the theme of the year. So what is the potential for another dealer group to come out and go, actually, that's a really good deal for me to get a massive amount of dealers to add to my existing dealer group, someone like Virtue or...
Well, I suppose...
I didn't be looking at this. We're going to get onto this later, but...
I think we will definitely get onto the heading, because that's on my list of stories. But I'm just looking at, I mean, I wrote a story about where this rival bid could come from, and analysed the big players who could possibly put a bid in for them. And at top of my list was Lithia Motors. They're highly acquisitive. They're desperate to grow. They put a bid in to buy Pendragon last year, but it was blocked by Hedin. So I think I still think they could come in with an offer. One of the things that they've said to the stock market in the States is they want to raise their turnover from 28 billion currently to 50 billion. And they're going to do that via acquisitions. So this would help. This would be a big step. And it would be a small step in that big plan. So you've got Lithia. I think Penske Automotive, they own Sytner. I mean, I think this would obviously attract the attention of the CMA, but they could still come in with a bid. They make a huge sum of money. They do very, very well indeed out of Sytner. The businesses are very similar. There's probably some crossover in some areas, but probably could be quite complementary. There'll definitely be some economies of scale there. Group One, another American business, they own 70 dealerships here. Lookers would tag on very nicely to that. They made £310 million profit from their UK business, according to their accounts last year. So they also do well here. You've got Headin, as you've mentioned, but I think they're pretty fixed on Pendragon. They own 27% of Pendragon, got to remember. Inchcape, well, they've said they're backing away from retail businesses and concentrate on distribution. But you've got these other smaller players, people like AP Eagers. They were mentioned to me. They're an Australian and New Zealand-based car dealer business that I hadn't heard of until somebody from the city mentioned it to me. But they've got a big turnover. They're looking to acquire in other areas. No language barrier there, of course, which is obviously very attractive buying here. And then you've got private equity. I mean, they've put in huge sums of money into Constellation Automotive Group, made a success of that in some respects. Another fund could do something similar. So I think there's lots of players out there with lots of money, and I've only mentioned a few there. There's probably lots of other businesses that have got the cash.
I was going to say, what about
make a bid?
What about Constellation, who already own part of Lookers?
They do, but I think it says a lot that they're offered to sell their 20% share as part of this deal. I mean, if they were going to make an offer, they would have done it by now. I think they're more interested in selling at the moment than they are in buying. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot on their hands with Marshalls. That's a big business to integrate to that wider group. But I think their biggest problem is probably Cinch. We hear very little about that used car business, but we do know that online used car sales is not easy. Cazoo clearly haven't made a success of it. They're trying to restart their business, as we've talked about many times. And the likes of Carzam, another online used car business, failed. So I think probably behind the scenes, Constellation have got a big headaches with Cinch, and they probably need to fix that rather than go out and acquire another big dealer group and try and work out how to plug that into their wider business alongside Marshalls.
Interesting.
Purely my opinion, of course.
We'll be right back. You want the best return from your advertising budget, and CarGurus Piston Heads are focused on the same goal. With them, you have access to millions of monthly shoppers across both sites. Connect with in-market, high-quality buyers today and turbocharge your digital forecourt. For more information, visit dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and schedule a demo with their team. That's dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and tell them we sent you. Now, let's get back to the quiz.
Yeah, well, you've stolen two of my stories that I had anyway, which I thought...
Sorry.
It's been the main flavour of the week, hasn't it? This is going to be a very, very listed dealer heavy podcast, isn't it? But I am going to go on to the news from Cambria. Cambria released its results this week for 2022, which I believe I'm right in saying are the first results it's released since it went private. Showing that it has done really well and kind of proved Mark Lavery's point that there was no point in them being listed anymore. It wasn't the best thing for the business, and they've been able to really capitalize on it. I mean, you wrote this story, James, so do you want to
the really interesting thing I found in this, and not wanting to hijack your story, is the comments made in their accounts about taking the business private. Mark Lavery was really open about why he decided to place that bid for his own business at the time. So, I mean, he said that during the COVID-19 pandemic, this is writing in the accounts, it became apparent that public markets did not understand the value of Cambria. Mm-hmm. The then board noted that the company had joined the alternative investment market in April 2010 at a price of 50 pence per share, market value of 50 million. But a decade later, in April 2020, the share price had actually fallen to 33 pence a share, with a market value of £33 million. Well, if anything summarises quite how the markets don't understand listed car dealer businesses or the car dealer industry in general. It's that, isn't it? And I think he saw, well, if they're not going to see the value in it, he certainly saw the value in it. So he managed to raise the funds. It explains in this that they took a loan for £56.1 million. Mark Lavery put in £1.5 million of his own money. And already in this last financial year, they've paid back £7.7 million of that. He's had his director's loan back. And they've made a very healthy profit. They've actually, their return on revenue last year, it was up 21.9%. Well, I mean, that's a very, very impressive business. And I can see why he wanted to take it private. But what I've seen since online and comments on social media is this just proves that having a business, a car dealer business in private hands where you can make long-term decisions that you don't have to answer on a quarterly basis to shareholders shows how it can be much more successful. James, what did you think of this?
I completely agree. I thought exactly the same. And it's relevant for the previous discussion we just had as well. I think there's obviously pros and cons to being public versus private, but certainly if you're privately owned, you have a little bit more freedom to take a long-term view. I mean, it can be done publicly. We talked about Amazon, they've managed to do it, but it's hard. They're certainly harder. And if you need to go through a period of restructuring, which sounds like they went through reading your article, then it's sometimes easier to do that out of the limelight, out of the analysts' review every single quarter. And that certainly seems to be the case here. It's a great story, right? It's a fantastic turnaround. And great to see a company doing that and performing so well.
And I think, I mean, you look at it, I think Mark got an absolute steal for that business. I mean, £82 million he paid for that business, and in year one, it's handed back £26.2 million in pre-tax profit. I mean, that's incredible, really. So I mean, fair play to him. I've got huge respect for Mark Lavery. He was our headline interviewer at this year's Car Dealer Live, and he did speak about this, but it was just interesting to read in detail where they'd written it down and it actually explained why they'd made that decision to leave. And I think it will probably, it's those reasons that we'll see a lot of the other stuff happening with these other listed businesses.
I guess the question is, at some point, will they come back?
Yeah.
Will they come back to the market? So do they need a period of time to restructure, rebuild, and then they're ready to come back to the market? Or is this a long-term play for the industry? I think that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out as well.
I think the other thing is, James, the investment market has lost faith in automotive retail, and I think a part of that is down to the fact that there is so many unknowns at the moment. You've got this transition to electric that no one really knows how it's going to play out. It's kind of on one thing you read in the papers that the electric prices, used car prices are going down and it's difficult to charge. But on the other side, you've got all the manufacturers plowing new product in. EV is an unknown. And then the other big thing is agency. No one really knows how that's going to play out and what it means to profitability. So I think until the dust has settled on those two things, I can't see them coming back to the market. But I certainly would love to see them come back because, as I said,
you want to be able to review them every quarter.
Exactly, that's exactly what
we're doing. Very nosy.
Please come back.
Do you want to go to your next story?
Well, I think I'm just going to stick with the listed businesses, and that's a story that I published this morning. And this is about Pendragon and Hedin in particular. So you'll remember Hedin blocked that Lithia Motors deal in the summer of last year when Lithia Motors wanted to buy Pendragon. Hedin, as I said earlier, owned 27% of Pendragon, and they said at the time they'll block any other deal. They finally showed their hand at the end of last year and made a bid for Pendragon, but it sort of fell flat on its face in pretty quick order. And there was the public comment on that was that they were worried about market conditions. I don't quite buy that because at the same time, Hedin were buying other businesses in the UK and in other areas of Europe. And I think what the big problem is Pendragon have got a High Court case hanging over their head at the moment It's about their Pinewood division. Both sides are blaming each other about the distribution of this of Pinewood software in Japan in particular. A case is listed in the High Court. And there has been no update on that. But however, there is a big liability. It's a £260 million court case. So it's a huge sum of money. And if you were a buyer, you probably wouldn't go out and buy a business that had that sort of liability hang over its head, at least until you know it might be sorted. But interestingly, this week, Hedin went out quite quietly. I managed to pick this up by just by chance, actually. But they went out quite privately with a bond offer to raise £110 million, the equivalent of £110 million. And they said that this is to fund further acquisitions and investments. And it kind of said, when chatting to city sources and people in the industry and analysts, they said, why would a business like Hedin need to go out and raise £110 million when they are highly profitable and could probably do it a lot easier in other ways? And it is because they probably need the cash quickly because they've got a deal in the offing. So we're talking to some of the people that we spoke to for this story, people like David Kendrick from UHY Hacker Young, he thinks that a Pendragon bid is going to come back. But I think it sort of hinges on this court case sort of being settled. They've been very quiet on it. I asked Pendragon twice for a comment, emailed them again this morning, no response, which is very unusual. So they're keeping quiet on it. The last they said to me was they don't comment on live litigation. So I can only assume it's still live and they don't want to make any comment on it. But I think once that's settled, Pendragon will be snapped up very quickly. And if it's not Hedin, I will eat my hat.
Yeah, well, if they're going to block it, no, I was going to say, or maybe they're feeling the pressure of the Lookers deal that people are out there shopping. But if they're going to block it, then maybe they just know that they're going to get the best deal if they buy now, when everyone's realizing, oh, actually, these businesses are all really undervalued. And
well, yeah, I mean, yeah. What do you think, James?
No, you certainly see that kind of behavior, right? I mean, I've worked in worked with private equity companies actually, and when you kind of see the deal fever starts to emerge, and people are going into a sector, they get excited about it. Other people start to say, wait a second, am I missing out? And so I don't know anything about this deal, obviously, but that's not a surprising behavior, particularly when you only have a small number of large groups that are still available to go after, and one of which is pretty developed already.
Yeah, and we sort of know the price that the market's going to be interested in. So I think they now know that they can buy them, and actually buy them quite cheaply, especially when you compare it to a deal like the Lithia one for Jardine. So I think I honestly think they're going to be these Virtue and Pendragon need to be looking over their shoulders, because I think it's coming and coming soon.
Mm.
Well, that's my one. Back to you.
I am going for another one of your stories, which is the news that Land Rover Discovery was named the most unreliable car or used car by What Car. I do feel sorry for Land Rover and the Land Rover Discovery. Yeah. when are they going to be able to move away from this? But this was the news that the 2004 to 2017 model scored just 47.8% in the 2023 What Car Used Car Reliability Survey. They surveyed 25,000 owners about what they thought of their cars. But luckily for Land Rover, they weren't actually the most unreliable brand. The most unreliable brand was Citroën with 60.3%, which I also feel like is probably not a massive shock either for a lot of people. Older Citroëns are sort of notoriously a bit breaky, followed by Land Rover and then followed by Tesla. Like, as you say, not the biggest shock in the world, but obviously caught a lot of people's eyes.
Tesla bit was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it? I have heard that Teslas aren't the most reliable, but I didn't realise it was quite as bad as that.
Yeah, they're like notoriously, their build quality is really bad. I think they have sort of sorted that out a bit, but yeah, for years there was always things going wrong on them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I was a bit surprised to see Tesla so high up there, but yeah.
I was surprised by Mercedes-Benz in fourth.
I'm just looking at the list, yes.
I never really think of Mercedes-Benz as an unreliable car, but
No,
I mean, obviously,
I do.
The people who read this, and we got an email from someone saying that they have driven their Land Rover Discovery for 250,000 miles or something, and it's never broken and very, very reliable.
Yeah, but then equally, I get lots of tweets from people saying my car broke after 3 months and I'm still waiting for the dealer to fix it. So, you know, I think
it's the thing that not all cars break if you look after them well as well.
Yeah. I was more positive. I looked at the most reliable and I found my Mazda. Mazda was in there. And it has been. My Mazda has proved to be very reliable, I must say.
I can imagine that Fiat were looking at this list. They're in seventh on the most unreliable and going, yes. And Ford, not even in there.
Yeah, that's an improvement for Fiat. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Right. I have got one more story for you because we've sort of covered a few.
Yeah, that was my last story.
Okay, I just want to touch on the news yesterday on the not that I'm an economist in any way, but the Bank of England raising interest rates to 5%. The reason I've picked this one and the reason we covered it yesterday is Auto Trader came out very quickly and said they don't think the interest rates are impacting car demand in any way. I mean, I posted this story on social media and lots of people said yet was what most replies were. But this was Auto Trader's Director of Automotive Finance, Rachel Jones. And she said that these rise in interest rates, they hadn't seen impact demand on the Auto Trader platform. They said on our marketplace, the growth in rates is having no effect on consumer demand, with average used car prices up around £3,500 in just 2 years. More drivers than ever are considering finance to help fund the next set of wheels. The interesting thing she said was while the recent increase in the interest has pushed up mortgage rates by several hundred pounds, it's only pushed up the average used car finance price by about £8 a month, which is an interesting stat because I think that just really does kind of sort of explain what this means to the used car market. I think the thing they're slightly missing there is that those people who are on a tracker mortgage are going to be seriously less well off to the tune of £300 or £400 a month, and that is your used car, that is your car budget, isn't it? So those people who were thinking about changing the car probably won't be now. So I'll be interested to see how these interest rate rises do start to impact the car market. James, what do you think? Do you think they are going to have an impact?
I mean, look, it's difficult to say. I mean, the first point is we've already had some quite significant interest rate rises. And so to some extent, I agree with what Auto Trader is saying. I think the reality, though, is the looking ahead, having interest rates at 5% and potentially going higher and the impact on people's mortgages, as you say, and the risk of recession, which people are talking about, is just not a good thing for any industry. And particularly when, you know, we're dealing with high value assets. So I think it's just prudent, it's good management for any business in our industry to be looking at, okay, what's my plan for the next 6 months? What are the different levers I've got if things turn out to be less attractive than I expect or growth slows, and making sure they're managing their costs really, really tightly. I'm thinking about that as a forcing function, just to reset and say, right, get really tight on managing the business. Because who knows? Hopefully it doesn't. We're very bullish on our growth prospects. But I think you just have to be prudent in these situations. You have to be thoughtful. You can't just assume it's going to continue when you have that kind of economic news coming out.
Yeah, but the other point on this, sorry, Becca, is on the used car market always does perform well in a recession or a downturn because there's a lot of people that who are in more expensive cars may have to cut costs, and that means buying another car. And actually, that is churn for the market, and it means that it keeps the wheels turning, doesn't it?
Well, exactly. I mean, and for us, the way it means people are more sensitive around pricing, and therefore for us it's actually not necessarily a bad thing because they're looking to get the best value for their new car, and that's what we try and deliver and do deliver. That being said, if they're trading down from a retail perspective, that will have an impact for sure. So I think it's hard to say definitively, but as I say, I think it's important to be thoughtful about your plans for the coming, you know, 6 to 12 months.
I was just going to add that it surely has the potential to be really good for the used car market, is as we've had this period of not enough cars, really short supply. And actually, one of the first things that people look at is, oh, can I get rid of my car and downsize it? Or do I need to use my car? Can I do a cheaper option like public transport or walking and things like that? So, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of dealers out there that would be happy for just like a few extra cars a week to tide them over. I speak to so many still who are like, we just can't get the cars. So fingers crossed.
There's definitely going to be like puts and takes as a result. Mm. And that's why it's hard to predict what's going to happen. And as I say, I think, you know, the way that I think about it, at least, and the way that we think about it within Motorway is, look, we have our plan, and with that, we still expect very strong growth, but we just need to make sure we're being thoughtful about what happens if we don't see the level of growth that we expect. And again, that's just good business management, and all dealerships should be thinking in that way. It's just this kind of financial news sharpens the mind and gets you focused on that, so you're ready if it turns out to be less attractive than you expect in the market.
Yeah, definitely.
Very good advice.
Well, that's my stories out.
That is all my stories out as well. So, James, who do you think had the best stories?
Who do I think had the best stories?
Yeah.
Which
it all comes down to you. Who was the...
Well, if I had to choose the best story, I think it would be the first one we talked about, the Lookers deal. I think it's a... yes, James, you weren't. I think the way that it's indication of what's happening in the broader industry as well, I think, is really interesting. How it's going to develop, the story's not fully done there. I'm sure there's more to come as well. Yeah. Plus, we're seeing other activities that are similar. We talked about a couple of stories that are similar. So, yeah, I think I'd choose that one as my story of the week.
Yeah,
I think it's undeniable, isn't it?
Yes, it was certainly an interesting week to cover the industry. I've very much enjoyed it.
Well done, James.
And thank you for the win. I will accept it gratefully.
Thank you for joining us today as well, James. It's been wonderful having you on and hearing your input.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it. It's been great.
Thanks
very much.
And thank you for being here as well, James. Thank you for listening. We hope you all enjoyed it. If you want to find out more about any of the stories we've mentioned, you can click the links in the show notes below or head over to cardealermagazine.co.uk and you'll be able to find them and more there. We'll be back again next week, so don't forget to hit subscribe if you want to catch us there. But until then, goodbye.